The views and opinions expressed by guests on the TWBC podcast are solely those of the guest and do not necessarily reflect the views of nor constitute an endorsement by the host, TWBC, or the advertisers.
National championships, Confederation championships, World championships, major professional events. For over three decades, he has been there for many of the sport's greatest moments. And now he brings you even closer to the movers and shakers in the world of high echelon tournament water skiing. From the founder and creator of the Water Ski Broadcasting Company comes the TWBC Podcast. And now here's your host, Tony Lightfoot.
Well, greetings, one and all. I am the aforementioned Tony Lightfoot, and this is the TWBC Podcast, the latest episode of, and I've got a really, really special guest for you in this particular episode. Many time world champion in tricks, whether it be open, whether it be youth age category under 21, under 17, what have you. And certainly one of the greatest tricking talents in the world today. She is none other than Anna Gay. How you doing?
Good, Tony. Thanks for having me.
Not a problem. Not a problem at all. So this season, how's it gone so far?
It's been good so far. Yeah, I made the Masters back in May and I won that. And so that was super exciting. And now we get to ski in King of Darkness here this weekend and excited for US Open later in the summer. So, yeah, good so far.
So making it into the Masters this time around. Normally in most seasons, you've already done enough from other tournaments and qualified well ahead of time, whether by winning a tournament, whether by having a higher rank. This time around, for a lot of people, that wasn't quite an automatic this time around, was it?
Right, yeah. No, we did the three qualifier tournaments. So May was extremely busy. We had tournament after tournament for 4 weekends in a row, but it was good. I think they all went really well. I qualified in the first tournament, so that helped relieve some pressure there, but got some good practice in the next two, and then got to ski the Masters. So yeah, it was a busy month, but it was good.
Describe what your practice regimen entails, you know, because tricking, as is widely acknowledged, is the hardest event to be really, really good at. And in order to be really, really, really good, as you are, you're going to have to practice an awful lot. So what does that schedule entail?
Yeah, for me, it's definitely I have to practice a lot. I have to take quality sets, but quantity sets for sure. I ski probably twice a day. Leading up to the Masters, I go out and practice kind of like it's a tournament. I try and do three toe passes like I would in the tournament, and then I try and turn around and do three hand passes and try and perfect those. And if anywhere in that run isn't quite right, I break down that run, do the sequences separate, and then practice those.
Do you split your runs into thirds or into fourths, would you say, if you were to compartmentalize your runs into bite-sized chunks?
I would say I split it into, I would do like the first four tricks and then my flip sequence. So it would be pretty much the start of my run, which would be some fives and ski lines. I would break it down into that, and then I separate my flips and do my flip sequence by itself.
So
kind of in the half-ish, but
okay, so I mean, so you have like about eight or nine, ten tricks in your in your handle pass, you know, and you just basically go your fives and then flips, and that constitutes your run.
Yeah.
Now, toe tricks, tell us a little bit about those, because a lot of people focus in upon the dynamicism of the handle pass. Obviously, the vast majority of points come out of that pass, but toe tricks, you can't afford to neglect those, can
right.
you?
No, I do lots and lots and lots of toe passes. For me, it's speed and trying to go as fast as I can to squeeze every single trick out of that toe run. For me, sometimes that makes the difference, is that one last trick, getting that last trick in time. So I really try and focus on going as quick as I can, trying not to waste any time whatsoever. And then if I do bobble or mess up somewhere in the run, trying to figure out where I can make that up.
Excellent, excellent stuff. So we've delved deep a little bit so far as what you do on the water. Now, how about scheduling for that? Because you're at the University of Alabama, and that is not exactly like a cakewalk so far as universities go. I mean, you have to be focused. You have to want it first of all. And I mean, just actually setting yourself time to do what you need to do on the water compared to the amount of time that you have to have in order to succeed in Alabama. I mean, give us a sense of what that's like.
Well, I would say the fall is extremely busy. I ski on the river right behind campus a lot, as far as tricks go. So I will go typically in the morning. I would say I try and get out there at like 7 a.m. and try and ski before any classes. And then I'll go to class and try and do some homework in between there. And then I'll head out to Lyman Land in the afternoon to try and slalom and jump or do whatever I need to do out there. And then I go back home and probably study until I go to bed. So it's a lot of, I'm in the nursing program, so it's lots of studying,
not
lots
an easy
of skiing.
Program.
No, no, it's not easy. It's been super challenging and hard to figure out a balance, but, for me in the season of life, it's lots of skiing, lots of school, and you know, that's okay. And I love it, and it's just a season, but it's been challenging.
Having a support system at home and having a support system in college is very, very important. Being obviously, you're part of the family that Russell and almost forgot who else is in your family, but it's quite an extensive family, and they're all involved in trick skiing in some form or fashion. But also Alabama as well. You have a support system there. Tell us who he is and how important he is to your success, both on campus and also on the water.
Oh, yeah. Sean, I think, is a huge part of my skiing. I mean, he helps me tremendously in slalom and now in tricks. He's been a huge part of my skiing recently, and I'm so thankful to have him both at home and at school. But my family has always been there for me, always supported me, you know, helped me in absolutely any way that they can. And I could not do any of what I do without them, without the help of Sean, without the help of my team backing me up, without Lyman. I mean, it takes a huge crew of people for me to be able to do what I do, and I could not do any part of that without any of them. So I'm super thankful for all of the team that I have.
Seems like the old adage, so far as Sean is concerned, is like opposites attract, you know. I mean he's like one of the world's top slalom skiers, yet I have never seen him put a foot in tow or ridden a trick ski before, you know. So but you always have the perfect comeback because you're an above average slalom skier as well, you know. So I mean, how does that dynamic work, you know, in that regard?
Well, I would say only an above average slalom skier because of Sean. My slalom has gone up tremendously with his help, but no, he has been awesome. He's really taken to trick skiing and learned a lot about it and learned my tricking and, you know, anything he can do to help. He'll pin me, he'll drive me, he'll do whatever he can to help me. And so he's been super helpful with that. And, you know, I try and help him with slalom in any way that I can, but he is extremely helpful for me, for sure. He does everything he can, and so it's super helpful.
So that pin person in the boat, I mean, absolutely critical, because I mean, not only must the pin person know when to release you, but when not to release you.
Right. Yep. In big tournaments, I typically have my dad pinning me. He is incredible pin person, knows absolutely like where to put the weights, where to slide over during certain tricks, when to pin me, when to not to pin me, you know, when. And that like is totally different in practice. Something he would hold on to in a tournament is absolutely something he would not hold onto in practice. And same thing for Sean, you know, he's kind of learned that, okay, where to hold me in a tournament versus in practice, for me to be able to stand up my runs. But yeah, pin person, you know, whoever's in the boat riding is absolutely critical to my skiing, and they're always super helpful, you know, getting my ropes, skis, boat speeds, not forgetting anything, and obviously pinning me and all that.
Okay, now obviously the expression pin harks back to the days where the release mechanism was a mechanism. It was like a split pin release, and nowadays most people go with the rope release,
right.
And which has only been in place since like the 2003 Junior World Championships way back in Chile. I know because I was there.
Mm-hmm.
But there was this whole controversy a few weeks ago, and it actually forced the IWWF Tournament Council to make a ruling on how aggressively, or actually in this case how non-aggressively, the person behind the boat can manipulate that rope, mm-hmm. so far as the rope release is concerned. Now obviously there are some people that argue that for safety reasons having a little bit of rope manipulation is a good idea, but then that on by the same token, on the flip side of the coin, you know, having that amount of play on the rope up to a meter at that point in time was just plain flat out cheating.
Right. Yep.
What's your take on that?
You know, for me, I think even this morning, you know, I had this conversation with Sean this morning. I was skiing and did toe wake front and trying to learn how to do toe wake front, toe line five. And it's a lot of rope manipulation there and me trying to learn how to control the rope. And he's like, you want me to pull it on the release, which therefore, you know, would take the slack out of the line. And I was like, well, no, I mean, for, you know, that seems super helpful, but for me, that's something I got to learn. And I think as far as the release goes, whoever's pinning me, I try and say, hey, like, hold it tight and do not move it. I think sometimes it can be easy to kind of move it a little bit, but my dad still uses kind of the older releases occasionally, which, you know, therefore it is on the, almost like, you know, you can't manipulate that at all. And so I think that's the best practice.
Yeah, just to clear up, there are two kinds of mechanism. Yeah. There's the split pin,
right,
that locks under tension, and then there is an opposite tensionless pin release, mm-hmm. That both are manufactured by Masterline. Big shout to those folks. But
yeah.
but which one do you prefer, the tension split pin or the tensionless pin?
I would say, you know, I think for me, I would want the tension one, you know, the one where you can't move it at all. It's just on the pylon and you can't move it, especially because then you have no questions in a tournament. You go there and, you know, nobody can question it because you can't manipulate it whatsoever. For me, a lot of the times it's kind of up to the pinner, whatever they decide. But for me, I think if I had a choice, I would say I would like the one that you can't manipulate, just because then you have no questions asked.
Do you think on that basis the rope release should be outlawed?
Not necessarily. I mean, I think there's a, I don't know, the rope release is so convenient. I think that's part of it, is sometimes, you know, I just leave
a
whole
piece
bunch
off the end of the jump line and just slap it on
there.
Yeah,
if I don't have a release, I'm like, oh, where can I take some rope and just make one really quickly? And so, you know, for that reason, it's great. But yes, you can definitely manipulate it to help somebody, which therefore would be cheating. So, you know, I think the rule is good, and I do like that it's set in stone, because yeah, it can be extremely helpful for the pinner to help you out a little bit there.
Having the rule in one place is one thing, enforcing it's another.
Right. Yeah. Well, so now they video the pin person, so I think it is going to be a little bit more strict.
Should it be even more, you know, you know, so far as the journey is concerned, putting a GoPro and aiming it at the rope, and if it goes around the pylon too much away from its original position, then do you think that'll be too harsh?
Oh man, sometimes that's hard to control. I mean, even me, like trying to pin my siblings or anybody at school, it's hard to keep that release perfect all the time. I mean, I do think maybe they could try and figure out a certain distance, but it would be, when the rope release is already pretty short, you can't manipulate it all that much. So I think that does help a lot. But as far as them videoing it and all of that, I think you can really tell when somebody's trying to help and when somebody isn't. And it's normally when you think they're probably not going to land the trick from the takeoff, and then they do. And so I think it is pretty obvious if they are helping. So I think the video is good. And I think they will be able to tell.
So common sense has to prevail.
I think so. I think it can get a little too tricky if you try and...
Now, let's delve a little bit deeper into the women's trick event as a whole, competition and everything. You are one of the world's top trickers. You're battling against Erica Lang. You're battling against Neely Ross. There are others out there that are wanting to have a stab at y'all's triumvirate of trick stars. I just come up with an expression, have I? Triumvirate of tricking stars type deal. But I mean, It must give you pause, and it must give you a sense of delight knowing that the kind of women's trick skiing has kind of gotten back, you know, in terms of popularity, and is being put in a good light again, you know, in recent seasons.
Oh yeah, yeah. I think women's tricking is amazing. Neely and Erica are just phenomenal. Janina's coming up there. She's phenomenal. Paige, Brooke. I mean, there's all these good trickers coming up, and it's fun to see. It's fun to watch. I think tricking is so cool because there's not a huge difference between men and women's, but men, I mean, they're obviously fighting for it more. You see a lot more strength, some more tricks that take a lot more strength. That is, you know, for me, seems impossible to do. And then you see the women, and they do it with so much grace, and they're so smooth. And so I think it's so fun to watch. You know, women and men can do the same runs, but they look totally different. But yeah, I love seeing all these girls come up and you know, be tricking upwards into the 10,000 point range. It's awesome to see.
It's like comparing men's gymnastics to women's gymnastics, isn't it? I mean, men can do like the floor routines and stuff like that, and go on the rings and what have you, and like the bar, and then you switch over to women's gymnastics, and then they do all of that stuff with such grace, you know. And there's good reason why women's gymnastics pulls in more ratings than men's gymnastics at the same Olympic Games, you know. So I mean, what do you have to kind of say to that comparison?
Oh, well, I wouldn't say we're better than the men in any realm. They're absolutely incredible tricking. I mean, there's so many tricking 12 right now. It's insane. But I do think it's fun to, I think, you know, both events are fun to watch for that reason. You know, it's they can do a lot of the same tricks, but they appear to be so different just in the way it's done. And so I think it's super cool, and I love watching both men's and women's tricking. It's just very neat to see, and I mean, everybody's skiing amazing right now, out of their mind. It's so cool.
It's a world season, so what does the dream season look like for you?
Yeah, this fall is going to be crazy. We have collegiate nationals and worlds right in there together, and I've heard this will be my hardest semester in school, so it makes me a little bit worried. But I think, you know, I'm going into this season trying to think, you know, I prioritizing skiing, prioritizing school, and trying to just, you know, go out and really focus on what I need to work on, and not trying to beat myself up over anything, but going out there and trying to work as hard as I can. But sometimes, you know, especially with three events, I mean, at Worlds, I hope to do three events. So that would be three events is a lot of work. It's a lot of effort. It's a lot of time. And so just going out there and prioritizing what I need to do, what I need to get done, so I don't exhaust myself and just be extremely tired. So,
well, if anyone could do it, you certainly can, Miss Gay. So anything you like to sign out with, any thanks, any shout outs, that type of deal?
Oh, well, I always want to say thanks to Nautique and Masterline and my family and Sean, Lyman, Hardy, everybody at the University of Alabama ski team. You know, all of them, they are incredible and just so helpful to my skiing. And I really couldn't do what I do without any of them. So just want to say thanks to all of them.
Excellent stuff. And thank you very much for taking
the time
to participate in this podcast. That was Anna Gay you just listened to. And this is Tony Lightfoot with the TWBC podcast, the latest episode. Be sure to join us for another episode. But for now, it is ciao for now. The views and opinions.
Thank you for listening to the TWBC podcast. Be sure to check out our website at waterskibroadcasting.com. Links to our presence on major social media platforms can be found there, as well as updates to our webcast and this podcast. Duplication or rebroadcasting of this broadcast without written consent of TWBC is prohibited. Subscribe to us on your favorite podcast platform and be sure to join us next time for the next edition of the TWBC podcast.